Hey everyone, it's your old internet pal, Scott McNulty. Before this episode of Random Trek, I just wanted to let you know about our amazing plans for episode 100. That's right, you're currently listening to episode 97 of Random Trek. They said it shouldn't be done, but it was. And for the 100th episode, I want to hear from you. You in particular, perhaps. I want you to submit an audio clip of you either sharing your favorite Star Trek memory, sharing perhaps a favorite Random Trek memory, if you have one, or asking me a question about Star Trek, telling me to defend my opinions, anything. And we'll make a Random Trek a palooza for episode 100. So use the link in the show notes to submit your audio files to Dropbox for me, or you can use hashtag RandomQ to submit a question or a comment via Twitter, and I will read as many as I can on air. And if nobody does it, then it'll be a very short episode. So thanks for listening, and enjoy episode 97, which I think is pretty good. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Michael Fisher. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Scott, thank you for having me. I am super jazzed to talk about Star Trek for the first time ever with you. So,
oh, I was going to say, there's like, you've never talked about Star Trek with
anyone. No, never discussed it. I've just watched it in secret.
And suffered in silence.
Right.
Well, Michael,
only when watching Enterprise.
Oh, take that, Captain Archer. Michael, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I guess if anyone knows me, then they probably know me from my technology reviews. I am I review mobile technology on the internet. Formerly, for 4 years, I was with a site called Pocket Now, where I reviewed smartwatches and smartphones and tablets. And I'm currently in the midst of kicking off a new brand with the people at Mobile Nations. I am... Soon, hopefully, will be known far and wide as Mr. Mobile, who also reviews all the things I just mentioned, but also electric cars and, you know, someday shuttlecraft and runabouts and things of that nature, hopefully.
Awesome. So what's your current favorite gadget?
Oh, my favorite current gadget. Oh, man, these are the kind of questions I'm never ready for. You know what I mean?
I didn't tell you I was going to ask this question, so.
Well, no, it's true, but it's not like a question that I should have to prepare for. You know, it should just jump right into my head. I've got it. The HTC Vive is a VR headset that uses an entire room and lets you walk around. You don't just sit there with this goggles on your face kind of, you know, manipulating things. You can walk around the entirety of a room and walk around in the virtual space at the same time. It's kind of like your own personal holodeck. And I just set it up last night, and I played in it for hours until I took it off and realized it was 1 a.m. and I needed to go to bed. That is far and away my favorite gadget right now.
Is it any room, or do you have to tell it like the dimensions of the room? I'm fascinated by this.
So yeah, you can set it up in any room. There is a minimum. It's like 6 feet by 6 feet, I think, is the minimum or thereabouts. I have it currently set up in a 15 by 15 room. And you kind of trace the dimensions of the space once you have it set up so that it knows where to
map itself out.
Exactly. And when you are in the room and you have the visor on and you are approaching a wall, rather than just let you walk into it, the game draws a grid right in front of you and says, hey, you're getting, you know, really close. You should stop walking. And that grid is... it reminds me so much of the holodeck that I geek out every time.
I was going to say, is it yellow? Is it a yellow grid?
Oh, I wish it was black and yellow. No, it's just a blue grid. But, you know, mind,
HTC.
It becomes. Yeah, I know. Well, maybe with a software update. We'll get the Barclay software update, and it'll also bring the sweet doors.
Well, that's a good answer. I'm going to answer my own question.
Yeah, please.
Because why not? I don't have any VR stuff, but I am – in love with also a similar kind of Star Trek technology, my Amazon Echo.
I don't have one of those.
Oh, man. I bought it when it first came out because I buy many things without any thought to what I actually need them for. And it showed up and my wife was like, what are we going to do with this thing? And I was like, I don't know. We're going to talk to it.
And I'm just going to talk right
now. Just going to talk. For a long time, it really didn't do anything. that was of interest, but now I can't live my life without it.
Oh.
I ask it what the weather will be. I could look out the window, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, what's like your number one command with the Echo? Because I have a lot of my phones respond to voice commands and so do my computers. So I was like, oh, maybe I don't really need it. But as I understand it, the Echo does some things better than like any other voice command system.
I use it really for two things. Well, really for three things. The weather, as previously discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy asking it what the weather will be, which sounds so lame as I say it out loud, but it's really fun.
No, it is.
I have a bunch of Hue Wi-Fi light bulbs.
Ah, yes.
And I enjoy having Alexa turn them on and off at my whim.
Oh, yeah.
What do you say?
Just lights?
Yeah, you say Alexa. You can group them. So I have a living room group and a bedroom group, and I tell Alexa to turn on. You know, you say Alexa, living room on, and the living room lights go on.
Ah, that's so rad.
And it would say, okay, after it finished. And then for a while, Amazon had an update where it just played a little note, which was sad because I liked hearing Alexa say okay. And then I assume people complained because miraculously she started saying okay again.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what the I would love it if you could do – if you could program custom responses in, because I would want Alexa to chirp like the enterprise computer and accept really like bizarrely specific commands like data's like, you know, increase lighting by 1/3 standard lux.
I think that will be the future, but Amazon has as of yet is not big into the customization.
Come on, Amazon.
I know. We're waiting for it, Amazon.
Yeah.
And the third thing I like to do, which is weird, but when I'm at parties with a particular set of friends of mine, inevitably the conversation turns to, how old is that famous person? And if you say, Alexa, how old is, you know, Steve Martin, she will tell you how old Steve Martin is.
So that's awesome because based on what phone you're using, you can get a variety of responses. It would be nice to standardize that. You know, it's like whenever I have an Android phone and I ask a question like that that comes up in conversation, it's like, what was that movie that Kurt Russell did in the 90s about the plane hijacking? And Google Now will usually get it, and Cortana will get it half the time, and Siri will usually just tell me to take a hike. She can't figure it out. So.
She'll say, I searched the web for this.
Yeah. Sorry, Michael. Let me check. Yeah.
So anyway. That's my answer. I love Alexa. I also have a Dot. So I've got a Dot and an Echo. They're all over the place.
And the Dot is just the extender for Alexa, right? That lets you put Alexa into another room in which the Echo is not.
Exactly. Though it is not really an extender because it does like a Wi-Fi network extender or like the Sonos you put in another Sonos speaker in your room and it expands the mesh network. They are unaware of each other, which is kind of a bummer.
But they're still synced to the same Amazon account.
So they're still synced to the same Amazon account. So they know you and your settings, but they don't know each other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a little bit of a bummer, but I imagine they'll figure that out. Well, that leaves room for upgrades, like we say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. But now that we've got gadgets out of the way,
yes.
They're both Star Trek related though. So,
yes.
Because, you know, talking to, I would like to say computer, turn on the lights, but maybe an upgrade when I can add my own custom salutations, because now you can either choose Alexa, which I like because it's a name, or Amazon, which I don't really like. So
I don't like that either. Yeah, no. Like I like Amazon, but I don't want to bring it into my house in that way.
Exactly. I think that the Alexa, the Echo itself is kind of creepy. And so saying Amazon just reminds me of how creepy it is.
The creepy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although when I say Alexa, it's like, oh, it's my little lady who lives in a cylinder and does things for me.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like the man who lives behind the ATM and dispenses dollar bills.
Exactly. He's very friendly.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Star Trek.
Okay. That sounds good.
They don't have any money in Star Trek unless you're a Ferengi. So,
that's right.
See, that's a segue, people.
Nice.
Not
well,
a good one.
Well executed. No,
thank
I think
you.
It was nice.
You could tell because I didn't have to point it out, but it was seamless.
Yeah, just naturally happened.
That's right. That's what that's why they call me the podcasting king. No one has ever called me that.
The podcasting lieutenant commander.
That's right. At ease. Star Trek, your favorite series.
My favorite series. This has changed over time. My favorite series used to be The Next Generation, and that's because I grew up on it, and it still has a massive it still has the place of honor as the Star Trek that introduced me to the entire world of Star Trek. So The Next Generation will never, you know, it will always have that place of respect on my shelf. But my favorite series since, and taking into account everything, has become Deep Space Nine. And I know that's kind of an answer that that many previous guests have shared. I think it is your answer as well, isn't it?
It is the correct answer.
Yes, yes, the only right answer. You know, Deep Space Nine is just so, one of the characteristics of the show when it launched is that a lot of people were kind of like, I watched 7 years of Next Generation, and Next Generation's like the best show on TV right now. It's so popular. And now you're going to make a show where the station just sits there? Like, it's not going to go anywhere? Oh, that sounds boring. And so a lot of people had that reaction, I remember, at the time. And I was like, well, whatever, I'll tune in and we'll see. But through some confluence of, like, how old I was, or what my brain was doing at the time, at that point in my development, I don't know. But the notion of a place that just sat there was actually quite appealing to me. And somehow I could associate it more with the feeling of home. So while I look back at my youth and I think, well, Next Generation is the Star Trek that kicked everything off, Deep Space Nine feels like the place I grew up inside Star Trek, which just sounds really tacky when I say it out loud, but it's true. Like, there's, no, you know, I think about the promenade and I'm like, oh, yeah, that place that I went to hang out as a kid, you know?
With Jake and Sisko.
Jake and Nog.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Hanging out and watching people go by because they got nothing better to do because Keiko hasn't opened her school yet.
Trying to, you know, sell their self-sealing stem bolts.
Self-sealing stem bolts. Or their wrappages of yamak sauce. Yeah.
Yeah, so I hadn't really given – I mean, obviously, I had thought about how, you know, Deep Space Nine doesn't move anywhere. So that's kind of the big new thing in a show, which is hard to sell, I think. It would be interesting to see have been there at the pitch when they're like, it's Star Trek, only they don't go anywhere.
Right.
It's just Star.
Yeah. And soon enough, they came up with a PR pitch to, like, combat that, where it's like, yeah, okay, well, we just sit there, but that means we can't just fly away from our problems.
Exactly. You know? We have to deal with them.
Yeah.
Until, of course, you know, Worf comes along and they get the Defiant and then they can go wherever they want.
Right. And yeah, by then they've got a war arc on. So they go places a lot.
It's true. But yeah, I hadn't thought about it. And so the only bad thing about Deep Space Nine is that it's orbiting Bajor. Because
You're not into the Bajorans.
I'm not
right?
into the Bajorans. I think they're annoying.
Oh, what? Even after that episode where Kira went down to the old man who didn't want to get off the moon, and they made friends, and then she blew up his fireplace.
even after that.
Even after that.
I like Kira. Oh. Don't get me wrong. I think she's a great character, but the Bajorans do nothing for me. Although I do like Kai Winn as well.
Oh, yeah. She's so deliciously sinister.
She is. But then, you know, every once in a while, they are brilliant writing in Deep Space Nine because she is, well, A, she looks just kind of evil because of that actress, and she was Nurse Ratched and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that she's a lovely woman, but she plays a very villainous person very well.
Very well.
But then they pepper in throughout her character arc. You know, she does some good things, and she's a complicated character. She's not all bad, like Gul Dukat, who's, you know, pretty crazy, but also a great character. So you always have to think, is she trying to help Bajor, or is she trying to help herself, or what's going on here?
Yeah. And when those things intersect, what's she going to choose, and whose side is she really on?
Oh, she's always on her own side.
Ambiguity stuff. Yeah, it's wonderful storytelling on that show. It's sort of like Star Trek Voyager sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. But maybe not today.
Not today. But before we get to that, I guess I should say people who are listening to this already know what episode we're talking about. Voyager episode 6 from season 2, Twisted, in which Memory Alpha tells me when they wrote the script and they shot the show, they realized it was too short. So they had to add a bunch of filler scenes. And you couldn't tell by watching it.
No, you sure couldn't. This just skips right along, doesn't it?
It does. So Deep Space Nine, your favorite series.
Yes.
How would you rank the other series behind that?
I think that, well, Next Gen would have to take second because of everything I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's such an important show in the catalog. I think followed by the original series, because that has to – well, for obvious reasons. There was a lot of crap in the original series, as we all know. But it not only kicked off Star Trek as a whole, but it had some of the most trailblazing, wonderful episodes and that haven't been reproduced since. So the original series and the films, I lump in with those. Voyager, second to last. Had a pretty rocky start, I think, and then progressively got better and then sort of fell off maybe. And poor old Enterprise. Now, I did insult Enterprise when I came aboard earlier in the show. I want to make it clear, though, that all Star Trek is... Oh, what did one of your previous guests put it really well? Like all Star Trek is good Star Trek or something like that. And that's not always true on its face. But under it all, I'd still be... Like, it's like that a bad day fishing is better than a good day at work. Well, I would rather be watching a bad episode of Star Trek than almost anything else on TV. So... I appreciate Enterprise, and I'm also wearing an NX-01 ball cap as we record this.
See, so this is very similar. When people get upset with me about not liking a particular Enterprise, I have to say, or a particular series, that, mm-hmm. you know, you have to, in the context, people, I like all Star Trek. It's just the gradations of like.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've been watching all the films in sequence with my friends recently as we prepare for the new film in July, and, you know, a lot of them are going to skip Star Trek V. That's the one we're up to. But we're still going to watch it. A hardcore cadre of us are still going to watch Kirk climb that mountain.
Oh, man. And there, Star Trek V, we did an episode of The Incomparable about bad Star Trek movies. And Star Trek V was in it.
Of course.
Shocking.
It's weird.
I know. I don't know how we came up with that. But Star Trek V does have its moments.
It does. It does.
There aren't many of them.
No, but they're there.
But they're there. It's, you know, I wouldn't recommend watching it to anybody, but I have recently watched it. So Star Trek 3, I think Star Trek 5, though, may be more fun than Star Trek 3.
Oh, no. Oh, I feel like we could have a whole discussion about that. I don't agree.
No.
I think 3 is the best of the odd films before 6. But
well, I think 3 is okay, but the problem with it is you have to watch 2 and 4.
You do?
Like, immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah, otherwise. Yeah, right. It's the... the hummus in the sandwich.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is great because 2 is like one of my favorite movies, period. And
Absolutely.
4 is just a great, fun movie.
Fun.
So,
time.
But then, you know, I feel like you have to get through 3 so you can get to 4.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's the essential component of all that. But you do get to see the Enterprise have a bad day.
It's true. A very bad day.
Yeah.
And you get to hear Christopher Lloyd as a Klingon, which it's worth the price of admission.
Miscast. Emergency power!
Miscast, perhaps? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know what you mean. He's a genius. Hot to Bach.
I do like when this in Star Trek 3 when it is because they call him up and they say, oh, this ship is talking to us. And he's like, get out!
Get out! Get out of there!
Yes, then it blows up. I like that scene. It has, once again, it has its moments. But.
It does. As we were watching it a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine pointed out something that I'd never realized before. When Kirk and company get aboard the stolen Bird of Prey for the first time, they're kind of sitting down figuring out how stuff works. We were like, ah, oh, gross. That Bird of Prey is so beat up and gross. And my friend was like, yeah, and it stinks too. Like, what do you mean it stinks? He's like, well, there's a dead Klingon dog on it. It's like, oh, yeah, that Targ would be stinking up the place, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Well, one imagines perhaps they just shot it in space.
Yeah. A little burial in space.
Just like there was the very nice scene in Star Trek 2 where they shoot Spock off in the photon torpedo casing. I assume the same thing happened. It was just cut out of Star Trek 3 where they have, you know, a Scotty plays Amazing Grace in Klingon, and they shoot the Targ off into space.
No doubt. Yeah, and a little miniature torpedo.
Exactly.
Yeah. Doggy bag.
So before – you may notice, people, that I don't want to talk about this episode. So before we get into it, I'm going to ask one more question, and then we'll talk about Twisted because
Great.
That's, you know, people – the price of admission. People paid to hear us talk about Twisted. That's how
Absolutely.
Podcasts work, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're waiting for our checks to come in before we start, right?
Right. If you had to pick – and I'm asking you to, so your favorite character from all series and movies of Star Trek. It can be, you know, a main character, a minor character, no holds barred. Who would you pick as your favorite character?
Ooh, that's an intense question. I don't know that you've asked this of many guests before.
I have not. I've asked limited to series, but I thought, you know, since we've had a wide-ranging conversation, I should give you the full landscape to choose from.
Wow, I appreciate that. This is because I recently watched this episode of The Next Generation that it leaps to mind, and I can't think of a better answer right now, so I'm going to go with it. Kevin Uxbridge. Do you remember him?
I do, Kevin Uxbridge. I played the Star Trek customizable card game.
Oh. I've never played that.
By Decipher, and they're out of business.
Yeah.
But you're sad. Single tier for Decipher. If any former Decipher employees are listening, which probably you aren't, but if you did, you were responsible for many hours of joy and me wasting thousands of dollars on these cards. they had Kevin Uxbridge as a card, and you played him. He was super powerful because he would destroy every other card on the because that's what Kevin Uxbridge does.
That's what he does. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, no, The Survivors was one of the first Next Generation episodes I ever watched. I think that was the name of the episode, right? And, you know, he appears to be an old man. He's not what he seems. But not only that, so Star Trek usually does that. They usually does the, well, he's not what he seems kind of thing. And they often go like one level into it. Like, okay, he's not what he seems and he has a horrible secret. Well, this guy is like not what he seems, has a horrible secret, but the thing he did that makes him terrible, he didn't do on purpose. So he has this sort of crisis of conscience about him. And they don't throw him in jail at the end of the episode. Picard just looks at him and says, we can't deal with, we have no law which fits this. Go recreate your wife again and live on this planet. And we are never going to come back here because terrifying.
We'll leave a beacon and we'll warn people
right.
not to come.
Set up the road cones.
I imagine that scattered throughout the galaxy are many such beacons because the Enterprise, in all its variants, and Voyager, just kind of leave messes behind them everywhere. Yeah. And they're like, you just stay here and think about what you've done.
Right. Right. Just leave a probe behind, just a repeating message says, deal with these people if you want to, but we are not responsible.
Exactly. Although, you know, Star Trek II makes me question Federation's knack for stellar cartography because they end up on the wrong planet. They don't even know where they are.
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing Chekhov isn't making those star charts anymore because, boy, he did not do his job on the Reliant.
No, he's not. He's not great. That's Chekhov. Although I do like Chekhov, so don't send me any hate mail, people. Chekhov is great.
Yes.
He's not good at his job.
Right. He can't have everything. They can't all be winners.
That's right. He's very charming.
Yeah.
He wants to know where nuclear vessels are.
That's right. He's got a great haircut.
He does have a great haircut.
Yeah.
He's just like a little beetle.
Yeah, a little monkey.
Exactly.
One of the monkeys.
Or one of the Beatles.
I was going to say.
I was going to say he's like a monkey, but then I thought people would be like, what?
Yeah,
you further insulting him.
Oh, it was a small little animal. What are you talking about?
No. He's cute. He's like a helper monkey. He's Captain Kirk's helper monkey. So Voyager, let's talk about Voyager.
Okay.
Voyager, I have said on many episodes, because the random algorithm seems to love it some Voyager. Plus there's seven seasons of Voyager, so there's a lot of Voyager to get through.
I wanted to ask, as I didn't listen to the first podcast episode of this show, is there actually a random episode chooser that propels you into a new episode each week? Or
I have constructed a very complicated system that consists – of a spreadsheet with all of the episodes of Star Trek except for the animated series.
Yes.
Because it's not a canon. It's not canon, so I don't like it. And plus, when I started this, it wasn't available on streaming, and I didn't want to make people buy episodes of the animated series so they could just talk to me about it.
Yeah, that's cruel and unusual. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I go to random.org. This is free product placement. They have not paid me to say this. It is the finest place on the internet to get a random number.
having used it, I agree.
Yes. And then I press that button and that number tells me what episode we're watching.
That is a cool system. I did not know that you actually had a randomized system in place. That's great.
Yeah, I stay true. And the spreadsheet also has the movies on it. So I will say the one caveat to the random thing is if I get a movie – I want to have more than one person on so that I add some people to the panel just so that we can have a larger discussion. But
yeah, that's smart.
But that's how the sausage is made here on Random Trek, or replicated, I suppose.
It's great. The random.org, also how Data came up with that absurdly long authorization code in Brothers, by the way. Not a lot of people know that.
No, this fun fact. I like that. That's why people come to Random Trek, to hear these made-up fun facts about Star Trek.
That's right.
But yeah, so the random.org apparently really likes the number range on my spreadsheet that Voyager occupies. So I've watched a lot of Voyager. I will admit that I gave up on Voyager when it first came on the TV. because I didn't like many of the characters. It makes it difficult to watch a show if you don't like many of the characters.
It sure does.
But I've since I've been forced to watch episodes of Voyager, I have had a rekindling of interest in Voyager. And Voyager, like many Star Trek series, has some great episodes, has some fine episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And has some other kinds of episodes.
Some absolute dogs, yes.
Yes. And, you know, none of the series are immune from this. There are certainly really bad TNG episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And usually in the earlier seasons, but still throughout the whole run.
Yeah, which, you know, seventh season rolls around, they had Rascals in there. You know, not a great time unless you like seeing a bunch of kids in uniforms that shouldn't fit them but do.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Really?
No, you know, you're right. I'm weird.
You are. You're the weird one. What are your thoughts about the characters on Voyager? Because I've given my thoughts on many podcasts about my characters. So I'm not going to tell people once again that I hate Harry Kim. So you go.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What's interesting about Voyager is that it was a show I think that had such promise. I watched the entire thing front to back when it was on broadcast. And when I was younger, I knew I didn't like it as much as The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine, but I couldn't quite quantify why, and I wasn't really ready to admit it because it was, you know, for a while there, it was the only Star Trek on TV, so, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to like what you're given, and if you're me. And so I didn't like to dwell on it much, but as I look back, you know, a lot of the characters started from such a position of potential. You've talked about this on previous episodes, but you've got this crew that should be at odds with each other, that is, you know, philosophically coming from very different places and very different backgrounds. You've got a criminal from New Zealand, a hardened criminal from New Zealand's horrible penal colonies driving the ship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these Maquis, these former terrorists on board. So, but by, I think, the third or fourth episode, you know, most of that tension is gone, and kind of you just have these... It's almost as though everyone was painted over with a thin film of kind of gray paint, you know. It's like you can still see a semblance of their – what drives them underneath it, but it's all just kind of fuzzy and blah and vanilla. So, you know, I like the characters for what they – for what I think they are underneath that haze of, well, let's paint this TNG and just get, you know, let's get moving, you know.
Yeah, and especially the first few seasons are really TNG light, and
yeah,
you're just like, come on, this is because, and I've spoken about this before, but I think the concept of Voyager is fantastic.
Oh yeah,
just, you know, they're cut off, they have to fend for themselves and just get back home. That's like, right. You know, what a visceral kind of story that we can all understand. You know, that longing for home and getting back to people who you know and being lost. We all, you know, right. When we were kids or even now, when you're lost, you have that horrible feeling. And this kind of just, I don't know what it does with it, but it doesn't do a great job.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Twisted, it was aired out of sequence because it's a second season episode,
mm-hmm.
but it was filmed in the first season. And when I was watching it initially, I didn't look it up at all. I just turned it on. I was like, okay, wow, this is really, oh boy, this is a second season episode. Like this doesn't feel... Ugh, something's amiss about it. And then I realized it was shot during the first season. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this still feels like Voyager. You know, any show finding its way in the first season, very few of them do it elegantly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Voyager, you know, especially, I think, took a long time to get up to speed. And you can just see so many of those things, those early little rough points showing themselves in this episode. Like the first 6 minutes, there were like seven forced laughs. In the first 6 minutes, like somebody made a joke that was maybe a two on the joke scale, and everyone was like, oh, Neelix.
You're such a card.
Yeah.
And this episode works like a checklist of everything I hate about Voyager.
Yeah.
So spoiler alert, I did not like this episode. It's got Neelix. Don't like Neelix. It highlights Neelix's and Kes's creepy relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Don't like that. It's got Captain Janeway praising Harry Kim. Don't care for that.
Yep.
It's got Chakotay going to his spirit guides.
Oh my god! With the panpipes playing and the pan flutes playing in the background.
Oh man, it does. And it is one of these. You know, Star Trek sometimes suffers from coming across a spatial anomaly that at the end of it, nothing happens and it has had no effect. And this is one of those episodes where they stumble across a spatial anomaly that messes with the dimensions of the ship. And at the end of it, we've learned nothing, although apparently it's uploaded gigabits of information into the computer, but that is never referenced again.
Gigaquads. Oh, they got so much information. Yeah.
That's a lot of information.
Sure is.
And we never hear about it ever again.
Never used to their benefit.
No. And so it's kind of like, you know, you go on this voyage, if you will, and nothing, absolutely nothing happens. Plus Chakotay yells at Tuvok, and I don't like that.
Oh, yeah. There's that odd. This episode is like, it has this habit of kind of sneaking up on you in the midst of an otherwise unremarkable scene because there's so much filler in the episode because what we were saying, I can't remember if we were on the air or not, but when they filmed it, they were like, they had to put 6 minutes of filler in.
Yes.
And that's crazy. It's a lot of filler.
Yeah, and it's crazy that, you know, they realized it as they were filming. They're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
We don't have enough. Oh, we don't have a B plots. Well, I guess they do have a B story, but it's so stupid.
Oh, yeah, it is. Right. The B story is the creepy Neelix and Kes relationship.
Yeah,
right?
He's jealous because Tom Paris gave her a locket and she didn't get so excited about the cake that Neelix baked for her.
Oh, man. I will say this. All right. This is the one time I will say that Neelix has maybe not a legitimate gripe, but Tom Paris kind of lingered on the outskirts of the gift giving, waited to be the last guy, and gave it to her in a sort of elaborate way. And then she's like, oh, it must have cost you a week of replicator rations. And he's like, two. And not like, so he 2 weeks of food he gave up. He had eaten crappy other rations, whatever, TKLs or something, to replicate this thing for her. And what is it? It's like, it's a locket. I mean, that's kind of a personal gift.
It's true. I will be on Neelix's side. Neelix is upset by this, and he rightfully should be.
Yeah.
Because Tom Paris is trying to edge in on his creepy relationship, clearly.
Clearly.
The only way it could have been worse is if she had opened the locket and there was a picture of Tom Paris in
Tom
it.
Tom on one side and Cass on the other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now every time you close it, we can smooch.
Platonically, of course.
No, naturally, yeah. Yeah, I like that they – I didn't realize that the production staff realized it until I read the Memory Alpha article, and you know they were like, oh, yeah, we realized that the Neelix character was not very likable by the end of this, so we wanted to put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, he doesn't get a lot of – but then at the end, Cass asks him for a picture of him, Neelix, so she can put it in her locket, and that's sweet.
Well played.
Good job, Kes.
Yeah. Well diffused.
That's right. I also don't like Kes.
No. She's tough to like, right? But what I was saying before is that this episode just kind of sneaks up on you and hits you in the face with these random non sequiturs out of nowhere. Like when Janeway and Harry Kim are crawling through the Jeffries tube and just out of nowhere, she's like, no, stop, Harry. Hold on. I know the thing that we desperately need to find is just on the other side of that door. But right before we do that, I have to tell you, I think you're the finest young man I've ever known or something like that. Where did this come from?
And it's clearly a lie because Harry Kim's the worst.
Clearly. Yes.
Janeway's just trying. I assume that Janeway just thinks that they're going to die and she needs to get his spirits up so he doesn't screw anything up.
That's right. Yeah. She's got to chill him out a little bit. Here, have a compliment.
That's right.
Now unpromotable bastard.
Now I'm going to open this hatchway and my arm is going to stretch out.
Yeah.
Freaky.
Oh, that was freaky. I will say that the effects in this episode were pretty well done.
Yeah. And I will say I like the conceit of the episode interesting because it takes – and, you know, this is a well-known kind of, you know, horror trope, right? You take the familiar and you make it unfamiliar.
Yes.
So this spatial anomaly basically messes with the locations of stuff on the ship. So there are lots of scenes, probably way too many scenes, of people, you know, trying to walk to engineering, opening a door, and oh no, it's the holodeck. Or oh no, it's a dude in underwear.
Dude in his towel.
You know, drying off after his shower.
Yeah.
which was funny.
It was.
Although he had absolutely no reaction when B'Elanna opened, he just kind of had a blank face and he stared at her. And then she kind of backed away and closed the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a very considerate spatial anomaly and that whenever it rearranged the ship, it did it. You know, it lined up all the seams just fine. So, you know,
it did.
You find yourself in the wrong hallway, but it looks just like the place you were trying to go, except it's a little different. No twistiness or anything.
Yeah. And And I just assumed that it was like moving them and putting them in different places. So, you know, walk down the hallway and it would like, you know, transport you elsewhere or something. But it seems like when, cause Kes and Neelix can't find her quarters because everything's screwy. But they go down the hallway and they note every, you know, door, and they're from all different decks. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And then the doctor floated this theory that maybe the ship wasn't actually changing, but maybe their brains were being manipulated by EM radiation or something. In fact, that they're all hallucinating. And that would have made a lot more sense to me, but apparently that wasn't it. And the ship's just, as we saw on their computer screen, whenever you twist the ship like it's made of silly putty, then this is how the hallways will realign, and somehow people's door stickers will get changed out.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and so, and this episode, it starts off with like a surprise party for Kes at the holodeck at like a weird French bistro bar.
Some underground like speakeasy. What's it called? It's Sandrine's on the holodeck. I don't think we ever really heard the name.
No, and I don't think we'll ever come back to Sandrine's.
No.
And there are some unfortunate scenes with the doctor, who I like a lot generally, stuck in the holodeck, and Sandrine tries to flirt with him and tries to get him to mop, and he's not having any of it.
No.
And it's unclear why they didn't just – oh, maybe the holodeck wasn't working. Is that the problem? So they couldn't turn it off or something?
Yeah. No, I don't think they ever said they couldn't turn it off, but it is odd that they didn't even try.
They were just like, well, if we're going to keep ending up here, at least there are chairs. And it's not just a big empty room.
Yeah. At one point they have a conference in Sandrine's, and they like put all the cocktail tables together to make a conference table. And I thought that was great. If there's one thing the people of Starfleet know how to do is have an emergency conference.
It's true. They are all very good at sitting around a table.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Staff meetings 101 taught everybody well.
That's right. And so I'm trying to think if there's anything from this episode that I actually liked.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a good question. There's something I like, but I want to hear if you liked anything about it.
I do like, and I have a bias because I think Tuvok may be my favorite character outside of Janeway on Voyager.
Agreed.
And so at the end of this, I don't like when Chakotay yells at him, which goes against my whole, you know, I wish there was more conflict. But it was just like out of nowhere. And it didn't make any sense.
Once again, yeah.
So I didn't care for that. But at the end, when they have tried all kinds of things and nothing happens, and in fact, some of the things that they try have, sped up the collapse of the Voyager, because it turns out that this thing is, they think it's collapsing Voyager, and it's going to kill them all, much like an episode of TNG, where Dr. Crusher's stuck in a warp bubble.
Oh, yes.
That's a better episode. Watch that instead.
Definitely.
He says, well, we should just not do anything. Because we tried everything and we should just give up and just see what happens. And I like that moment because everybody, it's so not what a Starfleet officer does. And everyone is like, are you crazy? We should do anything?
Yeah, no, it's true. And but it's a wonderful example of Tuvok's just, you know, well, when all else fails, here's the logical thing. We've done everything we can. So let's just ride it out and see.
Let's see what happens.
And it does set us up for the thing that I like about the episode, which is a rather nice, dramatic, almost death scene. We all know it's the second season of the show. They're not going to cancel it. The captain isn't going to – we're going to be fine in like 2 minutes. But we still have this wonderful moment where everybody has now resolved that they're going to just face it. And here comes this wave, and you can see it. Again, the effects are so cool because you can see it crawling across the pool table.
Yes.
And approaching, you know. And
undulating.
Yes. And – they're all sort of watching. It's sort of like if in a naval drama when the ship is sinking and they're watching the approaching wave or something. And there's nothing they can do about it. And they all have a nice little moment to each other. And Harry Kim admits that he's scared. And Tom Paris says the same. And Tuvok gets to put his hand down on the like chase lounge or whatever that Janeway is unconscious on. And, you know, you can tell they're super buddies. And, Chakotay and B'Elanna get to sit down and have the spirit journey together. And,
oh, man.
You know, I know that's not the best part of it. But it is a nice 25 seconds of an otherwise pretty rough episode.
Yes, it is. It is because they bond.
Yeah,
they,
it's tender.
They're going to face their deaths together.
Together, exactly. They don't have to be alone. And that's really nice.
It is nice. But then it turns out just was passing through. Nothing happens. It was trying to communicate. Janeway's fine. Hey, it's uploaded a bunch of stuff to your databases.
Right. Yeah. Free. It's like a reverse Google crawler bot.
That's right.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's just crawling through the galaxy, looking to insert information in your computers.
Right. Just dumping data.
That's right. Just a lot of newsletters.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The Voyager is now on every email subscriber list in the galaxy after this encounter. Hurriedly moves to change all of its firewalls.
That's right. I doubt it has any.
No, certainly not. You're right. But that's the other thing I actually do like about the episode too, is that there's that not only did the thing they thought was going to kill them not kill them, but in fact it was not just a force of nature, but it was an intelligent life form who was not attacking them, but just wanted to share information. And I think that is nice, because Voyager does often, it seems like 4 times out of 5 they encounter a new species and it's like, oh, these people hate us for no good reason. Well, time to blow some stuff up. You know, this was very much more Star Trek-y, you know?
Yes. Although it gives those episodes always give Janeway good scenes where she's steely resolve and she's not going to back down and she's going to kick people's asses.
Damn right. That is true.
She is very much, I think she's more akin to Commander Sisko than Captain Picard.
I would agree.
And I guess a little bit of Captain Kirk, although she's not as hot-headed as Captain Kirk. So,
right.
She's more of a calm, collected, simmering anger.
Yeah.
Captain Kirk's kind of explosive.
Right. But I like that about Janeway too, because she has a couple layers of it. Like, you have to get through a couple layers to get to that molten core. But if you're either a bad enough dude or a stubborn enough former Borg, and you needle your way through there, she's going to just white hot fury right at your face.
She is. She is not shy about it. You don't get to be captain by being nice all the time.
Damn right.
And I like it. Although she doesn't really do much in this episode, because this episode, nobody really does much.
No.
So, not
a very good episode.
No, nobody is served well. None of these characters are served well by this episode.
No. Except maybe, but Mr. Lieutenant Baxter.
Oh, yes. I wanted to talk about Lieutenant Baxter. Because it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like, to me at least, that this is an instance where someone won a contest where they could be on an episode of Voyager and get a speaking role, and it was Lieutenant Baxter.
Oh, it totally does seem like that, doesn't it? That scene where Harry Kim finds him in the hallway, and I had to rewind it because my girlfriend and I were laughing so hard. He rolls up and he's like, Ensign Kim, what's going on with the ship? I was just in the gym and things were crazy. And first of all, I was like, wow, I didn't know the ship had a gym. And then not 10 seconds later, he says it again. Yeah, I was in the gym. Man, the temperature dropped, but I must not have noticed because I was working out so hard. Like, what? Who are you, you bizarre?
Want to see my guns?
Braggart? Yeah. So I feel like he's going to take off his shirt. Yeah, check this out. You see how hard I was working out. What the hell?
He should have been the guy who was coming out of the shower.
He should have been, yeah. Should have just been pumping iron when B'Elanna walked in. 1002, 1003.
What's going on with the ship, B'Elanna? I'm working out. It's crazy.
Yeah. Is the gravity fluctuating? Because this just seems a lot easier. Maybe it's just because I've been working out so much.
And then he shows up randomly in the transporter room. we have never seen you before. We're never going to see you again. And you're getting a lot of screen time, Lieutenant Baxter.
Yeah. Oh,
it was very weird.
Yeah. Very strange character.
And I bet there's a story behind why he's there. He's a producer's cousin or something. I'm sure the actor is very nice, but it was just really weird.
It was definitely one of the stranger bits. Maybe that's what makes this episode worth watching. If you want to get caught up on Baxter's fitness regime.
Yes, watch his story arc throughout the episode.
Tune into Twister. Twisted.
That's right. Or just watch Twister with Helen Hunt. It's very similar.
Cow flying by the bridge.
Exactly. That cow, Lieutenant Baxter.
Yep.
No offense, Lieutenant Baxter, if you're listening. I don't know what your name is because you're not even referenced to the Memory Alpha article. So,
I was trying to find him and I was like, where is he at?
So overall, what do you think of this episode, Michael?
I remembered it so much more fondly when you first told me this was the one
we were
discussing.
Excited about it.
I was super jazzed because all I remembered was, you know, a lot of people kind of crap on bottle shows. I don't mind when they stay aboard the ship. I love the ship. I love seeing new parts of it. And I really love when things get weird on the ship. So, You know, I remembered things like Tuvok and Chakotay agreeing to split up, and 5 seconds later, Tuvok like walking in front of Chakotay, and they, you know, I love stuff like that. So that's fun. The ship being twisted all around, the effects are pretty cool, and we had those couple moments. Those are what I remembered. But on rewatch, boy, this one, you know, this is, I'll put it this way, it's never the, if you have someone in your life who's important to you, who you want to introduce to Star Trek, this is never the episode you're going to pick.
Yes, never. Even if they're, you know, they're flipping through Netflix or whatever, and they say, oh, I like twisted things, maybe we should start here. No,
yeah, right.
Don't do it.
No, yeah, I'm big into like weird geometry. Maybe this is the one for me. No.
I'm totally non-Euclidean. maybe we should give this a try.
Just somebody comes in from out of frame and just slaps their wrist. No. No, nope. Go to the next one, whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't even know what the next episode is, but it's bound to be better than this.
Gotta be better than this, yeah.
Well, maybe Memory Alpha will tell me what the next episode is, and then I'll realize my horrific mistake. Oh, no, it's going in the wrong direction. What? I don't understand how Memory Alpha works, apparently.
2x06. Yeah, I'm seeing what it was followed by. I can't see it.
What is it? Twisted. Oh, okay. Something. Parturition?
Parturition.
Planet Hell proves therapeutic for Tom Paris and Neelix. Well, maybe you shouldn't watch that one either.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's the one where his jealousy thing comes back. I can't wait until you discuss that one. I'm sure you'll love it.
Maybe you should just skip to the later in the second season.
Maybe just skip right on over to the fourth season and things will go a lot better.
Maybe. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining me.
This has been fantastic, Scott. Thank you for having me and, you know, peace and long life to you.
Make it so.